Hi, this is Major Jason Daniels. I'm going to go first, and then I'll hand it over to Lieutenant Colonel Nelson after that. First of all, I'd just like to say that our thoughts and prayers are with the Haitian people and all those affected by this disaster. From our experience in special tactics, we know that these first 72 hours are very critical in order to limit any damage. Yesterday, airmen from the 1st Special Operations Wing and from the 720th Special Operations Group opened up the Port-au-Prince Airport and started bringing in supplies there. We brought three capabilities with us in the special tactics side. That is the airfield operations side, which includes 24/7 operation of the Port-au-Prince Airport and bringing those humanitarian supplies in, as well as evacuating personnel that may need to be evacuated out. We have a personnel recovery capability with us as well, which includes confined space rescue, collapsed structure rescue, trauma medical care, and then the ability to do search and rescue if required by host nation. We also brought a weather capability with us, which provides local observation and reporting. What those three capabilities are made up of is three specialties within special tactics, all of which go through over 2 years of training to get where they're at. First of all, we have combat controllers. We're trained to do the airfield mission and go through formal air traffic control school, as well as all the tactical training required to operate with our special operations brothers. On the personnel recovery side, all of pararescuemen are qualified paramedics, and they are trained in various rescue techniques, from operating on a helicopter to, as I discussed before, being able to go into confined spaces and rescue people that are trapped there. We also have our special operations weathermen, who are trained in both forecasting as well as local observation. As I mentioned, all three of these different specialties go through over 2 years of training to get to where they're at, and are very well trained, very well prepared to get to where they were today. So I would like to, at this time, go ahead and turn it over to Lieutenant Colonel Nelson, who's going to give a more in-depth update of what's going on the ground right now.
Good afternoon. This is Lieutenant Colonel Brett Nelson. I'm the squadron commander of the 23rd Special Tactics Squadron here at Hurlburt Field. And I'd just like to say that this squadron in particular has a lot of experience in these types of natural disasters, and both myself and Major Daniels also have seen the devastating effects of natural disasters like this, everything from being first responders following Hurricane Mitch in Central America and Honduras to the Asian tsunami that devastated the countries out there. As Major Daniels said, within hours of our arrival last evening, we established airfield control and have maintained that control, conducting 24-hour operations at Port-au-Prince Airport. Two things right off the bat that I'd like to clear up that have been confusing in some of the news reporting is, first, that recently air operations into Port-au-Prince have stopped. That is not accurate, although certainly we have experienced a significant slowdown, primarily due to the support capacity there in Port-au-Prince. And when I say that, I'm specifically talking about the ability to process those aircraft and the cargo that they're bringing in. Specifically, there are only two fuel trucks and two tow bars available at Port-au-Prince Airport. So when an aircraft lands and requires fuel or has to be moved around on the airfield by towing, it significantly delays us processing that aircraft and getting it back out. At one point today, we had 44 aircraft on the ground and in various stages of unloading and offloading equipment and unloading evacuees, and we continue to work that. Another area that has been touched on by the media is that night operations may have to cease operations at night. That's incorrect. The airfield lighting is operational there at Port-au-Prince. We have the personnel capable of conducting 24-hour operations there, And we also brought portable light systems and have set those out. In the event that the airfield lighting goes out, we are able to set up or turn on those portable light systems within 30 minutes and continue operations as normal. One capability that we brought that Major Daniels mentioned was our rescue capability. We specifically have conducted a number of collapsed structure rescues today in coordination with the U.S. Embassy, and we are counting right now 7 specific rescues through that process. Our pararescuemen continue to work with the surgical team there on the ground and recently assisted in the evacuation of a number of American citizens by air out of Port-au-Prince Airport. We continue to work with the embassy on prioritizing where our capabilities are needed. The prioritization, obviously, there's a great need down there, and making sure that we put our highly skilled teams at the most urgent areas is a critical piece for us, and we're working with the embassy to ensure that we do that. The prioritization piece also brings up, going back to our airfield operations capability, the number of airplanes on the ground significantly hamper our ability to process those aircraft and cargo, as I mentioned before. So we're working with the FAA to establish some type of priority so that we get the most urgent capabilities and supplies into Port-au-Prince Airport as much as at the right time. Obviously, the men and women of the 23rd Special Tactics Squadron really have their hands full. It's a small number of people on the ground, and they're continuously marshaling airplanes and parking airplanes and trying to maximize the number of airplanes they can put on the ground at any one time, but still ensure that aircraft can continue to take off and unload and offload cargo and equipment as necessary. And I think that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's go ahead and get started. Jeff, you're first. Please go ahead.
Okay. This is Jeff Shogel with Stars and Stripes. How much capacity can come in from the air right now, and how much do you expect that capacity to increase?
I can't really give you a firm answer on how much capacity. I can tell you is that it is increasing as we go along. When we initially established airfield control last evening, that was following 24 hours of uncontrolled operations at that airfield, Port-au-Prince. So after that amount of time where a number of airplanes would land and park and download equipment on the ramp with no guidance on how to efficiently accomplish that, we really didn't have it was kind of a mess when we first started, and we continue to clean that up and improve our processes and our understanding of how to best utilize the available ramp space. Furthermore, as we continue to prioritize and as we continue to stress the requirement or the limited logistics support available at Port-au-Prince, specifically making sure that aircraft to the maximum extent possible land with enough fuel so that they can take off again without having to refuel, we can minimize their time on the ground and free up more space and increase the flow through Port-au-Prince. And then finally, the Air Force, we are strictly just an initial establishment capability, and we have already started and will continue to start, will continue for the next few hours and next few days to robust our capability with a contingency response group from Air Mobility Command that will oversee and provide more capability to manage the available ramp space there at Port-au-Prince.
Thank you, Jeff. Let's go to Bryant. You're next.
Hi, thank you very much. Brian Jordan, military.com. You mentioned the problem with having too few tows and tow bars. Now, among the things that you have brought in, have you brought in additional tows and bars so you can move these aircraft in greater numbers faster?
That is in the process, and that will be part of the robusting forces that come along with that contingency response group as we continue to expand the capability we have there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Larry?
Colonel, Larry Shaughnessy from CNN. you mentioned that there were two fuel trucks that were capable of getting around and fueling aircraft. Do you have enough fuel, and what is your method of getting additional fuel into the airport if the seaport is closed?
I honestly don't have a great answer for that. I have not been told that access to fuel is a limiting factor right now, but our men on the ground, everyone on the ground continues to know that that is a potential problem in the future, and they are trying to address those and solve those problems. Specifically to prevent it from being a showstopper in the future.
Thanks, Larry. Let's go to Louis. You're next.
Hi, Louis Martinez with ABC News. Gentlemen, how many planes have you processed since you started operations at the base? And also, with the expected arrival tomorrow of the 82nd Airborne, what kind of flow do you need to maintain that? I mean, how long will it take to process and then get those planes as they land and then take off?
Louis, this is Lieutenant Colonel John Dorian. I'm from AFSOC, PA. You know what? These guys, we're kind of pulling them beyond issues that you'd probably have to check with Southcom to get a good answer for that.
Okay, and how many planes did they process? Do they know that? They spoke about how they had 44 on the ground that led to them to block incoming flights.
That 44 number is the only hard number, and that was a number of maximum number of airplanes we've had on the ground at any one time today. I have not delved into the details to get the total number of airplanes that they've processed since they got there at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Joe.
Yeah, hi, this is Joe Tabbitt with Al-Hura. Do you have any information about foreign aircraft that have arrived to the airfield from other countries? And are you coordinating your mission right now, your operations, with other countries?
Yes, we definitely are coordinating our operations with other countries as they offer assistance there on the ground. And I can confirm emphatically that a number of foreign aircraft have landed there. I can't get into, I don't know the specifics on which countries when we start talking about airplanes, but I know there's a wide variety of countries that are participating as well as non-governmental organizations that are there on the ground specifically with aircraft.
Hello.
Thanks, Joe. Joe, do you have another question?
Yeah, may I follow up?
I'm going to go around because we have a 17
okay.
Online. I want to make sure I get everybody.
Okay.
David, please go ahead.
Hi, David Axe with warisboring.com. Can you tell me more about or tell me anything about your interfacing with the Haitian staff at the airport? I mean, who was there? How did you meet up with them? How have you integrated them into your sort of emergency operations?
Really don't have any information on that. I know we certainly on the ground, that's one of the first things that we try to do is link up with anyone that knows anything about the procedures and utilization of the airport, either from an air traffic control sense or from an airfield operations sense. And I'm certain my guys did that. I just don't know how much was available at the time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, David. Chuck?
Yes. Chuck Simmons from America's North Shore Journal. Gentlemen, the video that the Coast Guard took overflying the airfield showed that both the runways seemed to be operational, but I couldn't make out damages to the structures and the fuel farm. Can you talk about what is damaged and what is unusable structure-wise at the airfield?
Yes, sir. I'm not familiar with the video. However, there is only one runway there at Port-au-Prince, and my men have reported that the facilities there at Port-au-Prince are damaged. Some are usable. In fact, they just recently moved into an available hangar. But they had to wait really until daylight today to do really a good inspection on those to make sure they were safe and available for their use. I don't have good numbers at this time. We'll continue to track that and see what we can find out on how much of those buildings on the airport environment are damaged beyond usable.
Any word on the fuel farm?
I don't have that either. We'll continue to look for that information and try and get it out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Lauren?
Hi. I was just wondering if you could give us a general kind of sense of security on the ground that's surrounding the airport right now. State Department was urging people to at first go to the airport, and then they start urging them to go to the embassy. Does this indicate that there was any kind of security problems on the ground in the beginning?
No, during the initial aircraft that went in there included an Air Force Security Forces element that did establish an airfield perimeter, and there's been no breaches and no issues with violence or crime in the airfield that I'm aware of at this time, as reported just a couple hours ago.
Thank you.
And Lauren, please, who are you with, please?
I'm with the Asahi Shimbun, Japanese newspaper.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Richard, please go ahead.
Hello, this is Richard Lowry with Op4.com. Colonel, I wonder if you could tell me if there are any plans to send any of your men to Cape Haitian to open an alternate airfield.
That's something we're absolutely looking at. Cape Haitian initial analysis is that the throughput capability we'd be able to have through there is not that significant, but we certainly have the capability to do that, and if that's something that's desired to do and we have the logistics support to do that and the follow-on assets to be able to move cargo and equipment into and out of Cap Haitian in a coordinated effort, we certainly have the capability to do that if all the other second and third order capabilities are there as well.
Thank you, Richard. Let's go to Bruce. Bruce, you're next.
This is Bruce Henderson with the New Ledger. Was curious if you had an idea on what your hourly landing processing rate is based on what you can accommodate on the apron and on the airfield.
I don't, what I can tell you is that it's going to vary depending on the types of airplanes and the logistics support that they require when they get on the ground. For instance, we have one airplane that required fuel. It was a relatively large airplane, and it spent over 6 hours on the ground. A lot of it to accomplish that refueling. If airplanes come in and they have enough fuel to take off again and we can expedite the download of their equipment, then that obviously increases the hourly flow rate we have, and I think that just continues to vary.
Thank you, Bruce. Let's go to Jen. Jen, you're next.
One Jim Dalba with the U.S. Naval Institute blog. I know it's early, but are there any preliminary lessons learned? Yeah.
Certainly, my guys have learned a lot through the deployment process and through the execution that they've done over the last 24 hours. We always do a deliberate effort to capture those, and we'll do that here. But right now, we're very focused on expending the majority of our effort in life-saving execution down there. And we'll continue to capture those lessons learned at a later date.
Thank you.
Sorry, Jim, I didn't mean to talk over you. Matt, please go ahead.
Sir, I was just wondering if you could comment on how you're coordinating operations with UN Air Operations and who's setting the priority for inbound relief.
I honestly don't have any details on that. I can certainly try and find out and get that out to you later.
And if you talk to Gil Williams, tell him I said hi. Just saying.
Thank you, Matt. John, go ahead.
Yeah, Colonel, I'm wondering, after you've had some time to sort of assess and triage the situation, if you can give a sense of what your major priorities are going to be over the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah, certainly when it comes from to an airfield perspective, the priority is going to be to continue to expand the parking capability and our ability to offload that life-saving equipment down there in conjunction with improving the flow rate with making sure we've got good prioritization of aircraft coming in there and making sure that we minimize the amount of downtime that those aircraft require on the ground. And then to follow up on that from the rescue perspective of my men down there, we'll continue to focus on life-saving confined space rescue over the next few hours. We certainly know that there's a matter of days that we have to extricate those people that are buried or trapped in some means, and we need to rescue them out of those predicaments and get them to higher level medical care. And then the next piece is to continue to robust the Air Force's capability there on the ground with that contingency response group that provides so much more capacity to manage ramp and onload and offload equipment there at Port-au-Prince.
Thank you, John. Let's go to Paul.
Hi, Paul. Paul McGlair from DTI. Gentlemen, can you give us a sense of what time you got there exactly, and what kind of condition you found the airfield in, and what was the first thing that you had to do to, you know, start doing your job?
Yeah, we got there at 8 p.m. Eastern last night, and the airfield, from a structural perspective, the airfield was in good condition. But as I mentioned earlier, there were uncontrolled operations going in there for 24 hours, at least 24 hours prior to our arrival. So it was in quite a state of disarray on the ramp in particular. So certainly the first priority was to get that efficiently organized some way, and we continue to work that effort to this moment in time. And the more we can do that, the better flow and processing of equipment we'll have into there. And then we also certainly put a priority on using the pararescue capability that we brought that have a unique skill set in that confined space collapsed structure rescue, in making sure they got out to execute those rescues and save as many lives as possible as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Can I follow up to that particular response? Between 8 o'clock when you landed last night, how long was it before you started ground control operations, air traffic control operations?
I don't have the specific time that we established control, but what I can tell you is that my men got on that airplane with radios on their back and walked off that airplane ready to start talking to airplanes. The first priority we had when we got on the ground was to assess the airfield and make sure it was safe for non-military aircraft landing, and that's the first priority. That generally takes perhaps 30 minutes. It probably was a little delayed because they had to go into it in very close inspection because it was nighttime by the time they arrived there. They paid very attention to that, but once that was done, we were able to establish airhead operations immediately.
Thank you, Paul. Let's go to Nathan.
Hi, Nathan Hodge with Wired.com. You had mentioned at the beginning, Major Daniels, I think several collapsed structure rescues. Could you give us some more details on that and what the structures were?
No, I really don't have any further information right now other than that is the number and that they're moving from site to site as is deemed, which ones are the most important at that particular time.
Hello?
Yes, Nathan, did you have something further?
Just then, as a follow-on, any contact with the United Nations Stabilization Mission? I believe there were reports that they had had their headquarters had partially collapsed.
I don't know if where we've conducted those seven rescues that I talked about earlier, but there has been at the higher levels, certainly not with my men, but the overall command element that's down there is certainly in contact with the embassy and U.S. Southcom to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the international community.
Thank you.
And before I go on to Jen, I know a number of bloggers have called in. I will make sure I reach out to all of you. Jen, please go ahead.
I wanted to ask about evacuees. Do you know how many people have gone out and how many people you're expecting to get out of the country in the remainder of today?
I don't have that information. I'm sorry. We'll try and see if we can get that at a later date.
Okay. Thanks, Jen. Paul? This is Paul McClearly. Go ahead.
I think that one went already. This is Paul Bowe from AFPA.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got you guys mixed up. Go ahead, Paul.
That's all right. This is Paul Bowe from Air Force Public Affairs Agency. I was just curious if any of the other country militaries brought any people with the same skill set as AFSOC, or is yours the only crew that's handling management of the airfield right now?
There are other countries that have similar capabilities to that of combat controllers and pararescuemen. I don't believe any of them are on the ground there at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Now, for any other bloggers who have called in, I know Beth Wilson, you're on the line. Who are the other ones, please, that just called in?
Hello?
Yes.
I am Jean-Louis Santini with Agency France Presse in Washington.
Okay. I'll put you down next. Hang on a second. I want to get everybody else's name.
Thank you very much.
Beth, I have you down. Who else, please? Anyone else? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else on the line?
No, I am Jean-Louis Santini. I'm ready to ask my question.
No, any other bloggers on the line?
I don't know.
Yes, but I already asked.
No, Beth Wilson. Okay. Sir, go ahead, and then we'll go to Beth.
You mean me?
Yes, please. Go
ahead. Okay. I just need to have some clarification about what the FAA said before. I talked to someone in the FAA, and she told me that the Asian government asked them to stop sending planes over there because the airport was saturated.
Yeah, that question is better answered by FAA. I'm sorry, I can't help with that one.
No, but you don't deny that, because at the beginning of the press conference, you said that contrary to some press report, the airport is still working and planes are taking off and. Oh, that's not the case.
No, that's correct. We continue air operations at Port-au-Prince Airport. I really can't comment on what the FAA is saying.
But you don't have a coordination with the FAA?
We are in coordination with the FAA, but I can't comment on what they're reporting.
So you don't confirm what they say?
Let's go ahead and move on to Beth Wilson. I want to make sure.
No, I have another question. I need your name, too, because I was late for the teleconference. So.
Oh, you're late, asshole. Damn.
Whoa.
Okay. 5 minutes late. I'm sorry.
Beth, let's go ahead. Sir, I can send you the bios if you'd like me to.
Go ahead.
I can send you the bios. I'll send it to you in a second.
Thank you very much.
Everyone else on the line should have received the bios. But Beth Wilson, if you're still on the line, you want to go ahead?
Thank you. This is Beth Wilson from Homefront and Focus. I just, I'm sorry I did miss some of your comments, so if I'm asking something you've already covered, I do apologize. Can you give me a feel for how many flights have gone through since you first landed and the number of troops that you have in country at this time?
I don't have an answer on the number of flights we've processed. As mentioned earlier, the best I can tell you is that at one point today, we had 44 aircraft on the ground, and we continue to process those as expeditiously as possible. I would suggest that U.S. Southcom may have some of that information on inbound and outbound aircraft. And then, I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of that question.
Just the number of troops that you have in country right now working from the Air Force.
Yes, I don't know the total number, and U.S. Southcom's a better location to answer that type of question.
Okay, before I turn it back over to Lieutenant Colonel Brett Nelson and Major Jason Daniels, I wanted to make sure that there was not anyone else that I've missed, because I heard a lot of beeps when everybody was going around. Anyone else? Okay, I'll take that as a no.
I have a question. Can I ask a quick follow-up?
And I'm sorry, your name?
Jeff, Stars and Stripes.
Sorry, Jeff, you were number one. Jeff, go ahead real quick.
Sure. You were getting back to the issue of tow bars and fuel trucks. When are you going to get more and how many?
That's all part of the continuing robusting of our capability that's being coordinated with U.S. Southcom, and we'll begin with the arrival of the contingency response group later today.
Great. How many people are in this contingency response group?
It varies depending on their assessment of what's necessary on the ground, and I don't know what they've assessed that to be at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hey, Jenny.
Yes.
Hi, Joe Tebbit. May I follow up with my first question?
Joe, go ahead real quick.
Yeah, I don't know if the colonel can answer my question. How worried are you regarding the security situation surrounding the airfield area?
Yes, sir. As previously mentioned, we, as part of the initial response force that went in there with my personnel, we included an Air Force Security Forces element that has established an airfield perimeter and it has reported no breaches or any violent or criminal acts.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
With that, let's go ahead and turn it back over to Lieutenant Colonel Brett Nelson and Major Jason Daniels. Sir, the floor is yours to both gentlemen, the floor is yours if you'd like to end with a closing statement.
Okay, this is Lieutenant Colonel Nelson, and I just want to say that, again, we've had experience in doing this in natural disasters all around the world, and we are always honored to participate in these life-saving activities where we can certainly make a difference. As we were generating and trying to figure out what capabilities and how many people we were going to send, I absolutely had no shortage of volunteers to go and help out their fellow man in this endeavor. And as I said earlier, we're honored to do so.
It's Major Daniels. I don't have anything further to add.
Okay. Thank you so much.
This is Larry from CNN. I have one other follow-up. I thought we were going to go in order on the follow-up.
I thought so, too.
Do you have time? Do you have time for that?
Larry, just one second. I'm sorry. Did I miss someone else? I apologize.
Yeah, Brian Jordan.
Brian, I am so sorry. I called out many times. Larry, before. Brian, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I wonder, do you know how many, what kind of aeromedical assets you have on the ground there? C-17 type of aircraft equipped for medical?
I don't know that information. I would refer you to Southcom, who should be tracking that.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay, one more time, just to make sure. Did I miss anyone else?
Louie again with ABC.
Probably running out of time, sir. But Larry and Louie, if you...
Okay, I'll make mine very quick. Colonel, it's my understanding that two C-17s from the 82nd Airborne are headed your way and expected to land soon. Do you know of any reason why that airport would not be able to handle them landing and offloading the people and the equipment that they are bringing? A C-17 is a rather significant size aircraft. I'm just wondering if you think there's any reason why there could be any delay in their arrival.
I honestly can't answer that. I don't know the timing of that airplane or those airplanes, but Southcom is certainly aware of the inflow and outflow issues we're having there at Port-au-Prince, and I'm certain that they will make sure that the flow is right for us to be able to support those landings.
I think he's asking if the airport's big enough to hold a C-17.
I'm sorry. Do you ask if the airfield's big enough to hold a C-17?
I think that's what he's asking.
I'm sure it could easily, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. The airfield's capable of C-17 landings.
With that, I just want to go ahead and close today's Bloggers Roundtable. A note to everyone, we're going to have two more follow-up Blogger Roundtables tomorrow at 0900 and 1100, and we're trying to schedule one for 1000. I will send out the topic statements to everyone on the line, and I will also send the transcripts. Again, if you had any follow-on questions, please please send them to me, and I will make sure that they get answered. Thank you for everyone for participating. And a note, you can get a copy of the transcript as well as the audio file if you visit www.dodlive.mil. With that being said, thank you for everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Brian.
Thank you both. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.